is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Let me take a moment to let everyone know about the upcoming BTS Summit in St. Louis on September 27th and 28th. If you haven't heard, BTS is a comprehensive program for running a long-term, profitable, high-quality youth basketball training company. It allows someone to have a career in youth basketball, helping young people become the best they can be both on and off the court. I am honored to have Larry Hughes, 13-year NBA veteran and a co-founder of BTS, here to tell us what this summit is all about. Larry, tell us about the upcoming summit and what it's all about.
Mike, thanks and congratulations on your Hoopheads podcast. We established the summit to provide people interested in building a successful youth basketball program the opportunity to come in for 2 days of learning what we do, how we do it, and how they can apply our system to grow their programs. In March, I opened up our 16,000 square foot facility with leading technology used by several NBA teams, which tracks every shot, every movement on the court, allowing us to objectively assess the progress of our members. People who join the summit will get a chance to use the technology and learn how we integrate it into our programs. We will have David Martin, recently head analytics of the 76ers, speak about direction of technology in basketball. We will also have presentations and workshops on how to effectively build back office systems to create memorable experiences for members and build long-term value in the business. We want to empower the attendees to take their basketball organizations to the next level. So the first 30 signups get to participate for free. Thereafter, it's $199 per person. We have arranged discounted hotels in the area. The event also offers the opportunity to network with others in similar circumstances. We're excited to provide this opportunity to market and think that all attendees will get extraordinary value for attending.
Larry, the summit sounds great. Where can people go to learn more and get signed up?
They can go to basketballtrainingsystems.com/summit to learn more or call us at 301-602-3001.
Thanks, Larry. I'm hoping to make it out to St. Louis myself.
The whole month of June and July, I just travel around and go to camps, try to learn stuff. If I can work them. If I can just go observe, I do that. And I love the relationships. I can call some of those guys right now and ask them about a play or just simply ask them how they're doing.
Tony Sterling is an assistant boys basketball coach at Denham Springs High School in Louisiana. Tony has been coaching at the high school level for the past 8 seasons. In addition to his high school coaching duties, Tony has worked at Snow Valley Basketball School, the John Lucas Invitational in Houston, and the Nike Basketball Academy in California. Tony was an all-state player his senior year at Minden High School in Louisiana. He went on to play his college basketball at Bossier Parish Community College from 2004 to 2007, and then at the University of Louisiana Monroe from 2007 to 2009. If you have a chance to leave us a 5-star rating and review on your favorite podcast app, we would really appreciate it. Tell your friends in the coaching community about the show, and make sure you're subscribed so you never miss an episode. Check out www.hoopheadspod.com, where you can listen to every episode we've ever recorded and find out more about what drives our show. Grab a pen and paper so you can take some notes as you listen to this episode with Coach Tony Sterling from Denham Springs High School in the state of Louisiana. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Lindsay here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. And tonight we are pleased to welcome to the podcast Tony Sterling from Denham Springs High School in Louisiana. Tony, welcome to the podcast.
How you doing, Coach? Glad to be here.
We are great. We are glad to have you on and get a chance to talk to you. We had a chance to meet this summer in Waverly, Iowa, of all places, at Snow Valley Basketball School. It was just a great time. Got a chance to know you a little bit and wanted to have you on and be able to dive in a little bit more and learn more about your story. So let's start out by going back in time to when you were a kid and talk a little bit about your experiences with basketball when you were young.
I had 4 older cousins because I was the only child. So, you know, every weekend we saw each other. You know, we basically played every sport possible. And we went up my grandmother's house. Like on Saturday and Sundays, you know, play football, play basketball, play baseball. You know, back in those times in the 80s, you know, in the 90s or whatever, you just had those three sports. You know, like now they have soccer, you know, volleyball, you know, stuff like that. But those are three main sports that we played in. We fell in love with basketball, you know, and I just remember how they used to, I used to be the, you know, the youngest one. So I'm trying to play, you know, it's hard for me to catch up. You know, they like five
yep.
or whatever. And, you know, I always, sometimes when I first started, I always wanted to quit because I wasn't good enough. But like, I used to go home, you know, during the week and used to play on my own. You know, and you know, where I grew up at in Minden, Louisiana, it's like in North Louisiana. And it's, you know, it's the country. It's like, I mean, it's the boondocks, man. So you don't really have nothing to do other than, you know,
you're dodging alligators?
Yo, hey, man. You can get crawfish out of your ditch, man. You know, we do all that. But I used to go home when I really got into it, when I wanted to get serious about it, I used to go outside and just play on my own. You know, my mom didn't believe in, you know, having concrete because she was a track star, so she was like, you know,
gotta be on the cinders, huh?
Yeah, she was like, you need to play on dirt, play on the grass, you know. And at first I was like, you know, I can't dribble the ball because the grass is so thick. But I'm going to tell you what, man, I was out there so much, man. The grass just faded away, man.
You're eventually able to wear it out, right?
Oh, I remember my fondest memory in those times, man, in the sixth grade. I was playing against my cousin. He was in the ninth grade or whatever. And, you know, he was like, you know, you think you're good now, so let's play one-on-one. And I just remember I made like three shots in a row, man, and I beat him. He was mad. And that's when I knew then, you know, all that time I was playing by myself, just working. Because, you know, back in the day, we didn't have YouTube or like trainers or whatever. Like when the NBA game came on or a college game on TV, you sat down and just looked, like you emulated whatever player you was watching.
That's so true.
And I used to watch everybody, you know. I think I grew up in a great generation because I got to experience who Michael Jordan was. But my favorite player was Robert Horry when he played with the Houston Rockets or whatever.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. Big shot, Rob. Big shot, Rob.
Oh, man. You know, he was a young cat on the Rockets team or whatever. And like my cousins or whatever, their father, he loved the Houston Rockets because they used to live in Houston when they were younger. So he loved Akeem Olajuwon. And, you know, he always talked about Vernon Maxwell, Kenny Smith, all those guys. But I was like, who is number 25? And looking at Robert Horry, he knocking down big shots. And, you know, when he was younger, he used to dunk on people. So I tried to, how he used to shoot the ball pretty well. So I used to go outside and just shoot threes, you know, instead of, you know, doing the right way or whatever. And then another player I used to watch was Tim Hardaway, how he used to handle the ball. And
killer crossover.
Oh, man. I used to do it both ways, man. Like, and at first I trained myself, like, if I can't dribble on grass or this dirt, I can't dribble on a hardwood floor or whatever.
It's so funny because nobody, before Tim Hardaway, nobody had that move.
Hey, man, I used to watch it all the time.
But nobody did it. Nobody had that. And now that's like, you know, if you're a high school guard, you have it. But at that time, nobody had that move.
Oh no, man! Like when we had practice today with our guys, it's like a common move now.
Right.
Like
exactly.
We got two young guards, and they do it all the time. You know, just to get open, not just to make somebody look bad. Like they're, you know, bringing the ball up, they're doing a little mini crossover.
Yeah.
Like back in the day, when you see Tim Hardaway, he used to get you, you know, on that wing or whatever, a little one pound dribble, and he'll cross you over to the left. He used to dribble with his left hand, pound it, then go back to his right. That's when he was, I mean, it was lethal. He went, you know, he used to dribble with his right, then crossover, but him going to the with his left hand, then his right, it was unbelievable, man. But I grew up watching a lot of lot of NBA games.
Who was like, your favorite? Who was your favorite team? So Ori was your favorite player. Did you follow the Rockets, or who was your favorite team when you were
man,
a kid?
I'll tell you this, man. When Michael Jordan, when he retired, man, I didn't have a favorite team. So I was basically, I was on the Penny Hardaway juice, man. Like,
nice. Look, hey, I think you're just kissing up to me now, Tony. I think you've been listening to too many of our podcasts because you're just kissing up to me now.
I was on the Penny Hardaway juice when he first came out, because you know I used to have the commercials with Little Penny. You know, Chris Rock had that voice.
Gardner.
I'm telling you, like, I had his shoes, man. But like, it was just something about the Rockets, how they played, especially when they got Clyde Drexler or whatever. Just somehow the way they played. You know, Sam Cassell. You know, even though he was an underrated player, you know, during the NBA until he got to the Milwaukee Bucks. I mean, he was good when he was younger, even though
Well, he was a rookie on their. I think the first title team, the 94-95 or 93-94 title team. I think Cassell was a rookie on that team. So he was fantastic.
Oh yeah. But like, you know, as far as like the college game, I used to watch Duke, and my favorite player then was Trajan Langdon, which he's in he works with the Pelicans now. So
yeah, he works for them
because Griff got him, didn't he?
Yeah, I think I forget what his title is. So here's my Trajan Langdon story. It's kind of an unfortunate story. Because the Cavs drafted him, but I remember I think it was in the NCAA tournament his senior year, and he was the only player I remember from this story is Trajan Langdon, but I remember it clear as day in terms of what happened. I don't remember who they were playing against or who the opponent was, but I remember him dribbling the ball up the floor, and I remember him working so hard with his dribble to try to get past whoever it was that was defending him. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking that at that point, when Trajan Langdon was coming out, I was probably in my late 20s maybe, and at that point I was on the men's league circuit, and you know, you just don't move as well as you used to. And I would struggle to go around quicker guys or guys that I used to be able to go around. I couldn't go around them anymore. And I watched Trajan Langdon. I thought, he looks exactly how I feel when I play in these games and I can't go around somebody. I'm like, that doesn't bode well for him at the next level. And
right. Then the Cavs drafted him.
Man, he has the most beautiful shot I ever seen.
He was a fantastic, fantastic college player. Just a great college player.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. Like I still go back, you know, on YouTube and watch some of his college games, because I just used to like watching him play then. You know, sometimes like for instance, we got a kid on our team, you know, with that same length or whatever, and he's not too fast, but he has a naturally pretty shot or whatever. So I try to find a player that, you know, that they can cater to, like one dribble pull ups or, you know, catch and shoot, you know, stuff like that.
Do you find yourself pulling up stuff for kids, like pulling out video clips and sending it to the kids that you coach?
Like every year with our freshman team at our school, I always put them in a mass text and I send them the box drills video.
That's awesome.
I do those drills with like all our with every kid that come through our freshman program, and like I'm starting with them now. You know, like we're only 2 weeks in school, and you know it's always, you know, always, it's not hard, but you know it's always a little time where they got to learn them. But
so
like,
tell people who maybe aren't familiar with that term, because there's people who maybe aren't familiar with Snow Valley and maybe haven't heard of the box drills from Coach Locke. Tell us what that is, so that anybody who's out there listening, give us an idea of what the box drills are. So maybe some people out there are like, box drills, what are these guys talking about? So tell us what that's all about, Tony.
Well, I've been going to Snow Valley for like, you know, 8 years, and too many people don't know who Tace Locke is. He's probably incredible dude, but he made these footwork drills up called the box drills, where you'll spin the ball to yourself at the elbow, and you'll jump stop on 2 feet, then you'll, you know, the first move is a drop step. Then you go in for a layup. Then you do it on the other side. Then the next move is a shoulder fake. for a shot at the elbow. You do all of them on the elbow. Then the next one is your shoulder fake, shot fake, rip through, and you'll drive. And you do it on the other side as well. Then you'll, you know, do the next move is reverse pivot, shot. Then the next move is a reverse pivot, rip, go straight to the goal. Then the last move, I never do the step backs with the freshmen. I kind of do it with them.
They get enough of that with James Harden. They don't need to to do that with them.
Yeah, I just do like the ones that are not that complicated. But the last one you do, you know, you fake the rip, then you'll cross step and drive it to the other side of the rim for a layup. And I've been, you know, as you do them more or whatever, you get creative with them or whatever. So like one day I'll do them on the block or whatever. Then the next day I'll do them on the elbows. Then once we really, really get good at them, we'll do them on the wings or whatever.
Then, yeah, you can do it's great. I mean, their footwork is so important. And for anybody who's out there listening, if you just do a quick search of Tate's Lock box drills on YouTube, you'll find probably tons and tons of examples of what it is that we're talking about. And it's extremely valuable. I don't care if you're coaching second graders or you're coaching a high school team or you're coaching a college team. It's just the footwork and the basic fundamentals that those drills put a player through are so valuable.
Oh, yes. When, you know, all those guys up there, they were telling me about some girl she used to play at Fort Hays. And she did them for 2 months during the summer. And she basically made her move off what she needed to do during the season. I think she was like the leading scorer in Division II or whatever. I forgot her name.
Not surprising though.
Yeah.
Put the
yeah.
time in, and that those drills yeah. are just, again, they're so valuable to whether it's yeah. for a coach to learn what those are and you put them to use with their team, or just an individual player to go and look them up and be working on that. And so we'll maybe even link that up in the show notes so people can have it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the guy that watched the play a lot, he was telling me, he said she barely dribbled 3 times.
Clay Thompson. Like,
yes. I was like, really? And it's amazing. I do them all the time. Like sometimes, you know, like I'm a basketball maniac, man. I do them on my own. I do them sometimes. I show the kids that I can do them. Then once they see me that I can do them too, then they'll end up doing it, having more confidence or whatever. And Tate's Lock, you know, he got a lot of quotes. He was like, in order for your kids to get better, they got to see you sweat too. And that's a true statement. True statement.
I totally agree. I tell Mike this all the time, but when we do our conditioning, I do the conditioning with the kids because I feel like they respect it more and they don't gripe as much because there I am running right next to them and doing it with them. Seeing me do it, and obviously I don't quite move as well as I used to. The kids like to try and beat me, so that's always their goal. So
there's a little bit of little motivation for you for sure.
That's perfect.
So tell me how you originally got connected to the guys at Snow Valley. How did you end up getting an opportunity to go and work there for the first time, and now you've been able to go back for 7 or 8 years in a row. So talk about how you got there in the first place.
I used to work Northwestern States. Like they used to have like a kids camp and they used to have like a overnight camp because I played for one of the assistant coaches up there, Jeff Moore or whatever. And one of the other assistants, Jacob Spielbauer, he's from Iowa. So, you know, I'm always looking for new stuff, like so I, you know, either Google something. I always heard about Snow Valley, so when he told me he was from Iowa, I was like, man, you ever heard of Snow Valley? He was like, have I ever heard? He was like, man, I was a camper and a worker. So I was like, really? I said, I heard it's amazing, man. He was like, you want to work it? I said, yeah, man, come on. So he called Coach Show for me or whatever, and the first time I went, I only worked one. First time I went, I said, I'm coming back. I told Coach Shaw, I was like, can I work two next year? Like, are you sure you can handle it? I said, Coach, I can handle it, Coach. I want to come back. And, I mean, it might be the best thing that ever happened to me as far as that camp. I mean, a lot of great stuff happened to me, but that camp is almost – it's family up there to me because, you know, like, because Show used to look at me crazy. Like, you come back. The first year I worked one, then the second 2 years I worked two. Then that fourth year I was like, Coach, can I work all of them? He was like, are you sure you can handle all of them? You know, and, you know, me not having kids or a wife or whatever, I can, you know, the whole month of June and July, I just travel around and go to camps, try to learn stuff. If I can work them. If I can just go observe, I do that. And always that camp, you know, I love the relationships. You know, I mean, I can call some of those guys right now and ask them about a play or just simply ask them how they're doing, you know. Coach Spielbauer's dad, you know, another guy, Chris Kern, Dave Slaubaugh, all those guys, they great guys, man. They willing to you know, invest in you. And, you know, I always tell, like, Coach Show, Coach Livesey, you know, Coach Herb Livesey was the guy that started it. And Coach Locke, I always tell them, God, I wish I would have met y'all 20 years ago. Because they, you know, they got so much wisdom about the game or whatever. And I want to, you know, I email those guys, you know, probably twice a month at least. I don't want to get on their nerves or nothing. But they great guys. I always tell Coach Show and all those guys, I want to come back as much as I can. I don't care, you know, what's going on, you know, Lord willing, I want to come back every year, you know.
So, besides those great relationships, we can say the same thing for sure, that since we started the podcast and have been connected to a lot of the great people at Snow Valley, from the ones that you mentioned, and obviously we've had Greg White on, and Nick LaGalbo, and Nick Schaff, and Marshall Cho, and then Coach Showalter, and we're going to have Coach Schlaba on soon, and yourself, and we got some other people that I'm sure are going to be a part of it as we move forward. But besides those relationships, we're obviously, goes without saying how good the people are, and I always judge, wherever I go, I judge it by the people, and the people are tremendous. But what else is it about Snow Valley in terms of what you take away from it from more of a basketball standpoint that makes it so special to you?
Oh, I'll give you an example about the box drills. You know how you want to do them the right way? Like, for instance, they had a middle school coach up there. He was doing them the opposite way. Like, he was doing them the wrong way. And he was telling me, he was like, man, I want to have my kid to where, like, he can think anyway. And I was thinking about that, even though it's the wrong way. And he's right. You know, like a middle school kid, you teaching them that while they're young. And they can have their own creativity, just like how we were back in the day. You know, we right. Go outside, you know, thinking.
Wait,
you know,
what's outside again?
Wait, outside basketball? Wait, you know, they do that? You used to play basketball outside?
Right, Coach.
isn't that, I'm sure your kids are the same way. Same way down by you. Like, kids here look at you like you're crazy. That you, what? You played outside? What do you mean?
So I didn't tell Mike this, but so today we were talking. I started back at school. My first official day is tomorrow. So we get back to school today, and I was talking to a bunch of guys, high school kids, because there were some high school kids that were up doing some stuff, like showing people around the high school because they remodeled it or whatever. And I was talking to them, like, hey, guys, you should really come and play basketball outside with us next year.
Right.
And they're by the way, going to be seniors this year. They looked at Lee like I was speaking a foreign language. Wait, you play basketball outside? And he's like, yeah, we play basketball outside. Every Saturday morning, we play out in the summer. We play outside. And they thought it was the most crazy thing they've ever heard in their lives. And
Coach, like, back in the day, we used to play all the time outside. You know, down here in South Louisiana, or in Louisiana in general, man, you know, the heat just stick on you. Yep. You know, we still outside. And man, I used to go outside and think, you know, oh, Penny Hardaway did this move.
Right.
It can be a simple layup how he did it, like a reverse layup or whatever. But we worked on it until we got it right. You know, my main deal is to go both ways. When I was in the eighth grade, I was like, I want to dribble with both hands before I get to ninth grade. Both hands. I don't want to go into high school just going right and can't barely drew my left hand. So I made that a goal to be expeditious.
Yep.
Going to high school. Cause you know, shooting, I mean, I love shooting. Who don't love shooting? So, you know, you watching Reggie Miller, Hershey Hawkins. If y'all remember him, used to play
for the 76ers, Sonics, from Bradley.
Yep. Jeff Hornacek.
Yep. Phoenix Suns.
Man,
Rex Chapman might be more famous now for his Twitter account, unfortunately, but back when he was at Kentucky, the Boy King, man, that was the guy who could jump out of the gym.
Could jump out of the gym, and you know, on his jump shot, I mean, he got so high. Going into my senior year, I actually went to a 5-star basketball camp when it was. I mean, you know, that was a camp to go to.
Absolutely.
And he was there. He got you know, he was talking to all the campers, him and Mike Vitello.
Okay.
You know.
So was he playing or he was there as a counselor?
He was actually in the NBA. He was still playing.
Okay. All right. Okay. All right.
But he was around. He was interacting with all the kids and stuff or whatever. He was telling us like. You know, you go to Station 13, you know, like right. Or whatever, and he was showing us moves or how to dribble the ball or, you know, how you do what you're supposed to do in the classroom and stuff like that. But one of the counselors at the time was Gary Forbes. If y'all remember him, he went to Virginia. He went to Virginia. I think he ended up transferring, going to Cincinnati. I mean, he was smooth. I mean, he was like 6'6". I mean, he could do it all. Or whatever, but he was interacting with us a lot too. Like he used to sit at the table with us and stuff like that.
That's cool. There's nothing better than that.
Yeah, and I mean, we got a chance to talk to him even more because, you know, Michael Jordan, two sons was at the camp at the time. So
nice. There you go.
You know, he was. You know, everybody was around them. So.
So I was going to ask you who the big names were. Who are the big name players the week that you were there? Who was the biggest name player that somebody might have heard of that was there the week that you were at 5-star?
It was just mainly the college guys. They had two college guys from Florida State. Then they had Gary Forbes. Then you know, other than you know Michael Jordan, two sons, and they were decent. I mean, they were good at that age or whatever.
They got good genetics.
Oh yeah, the Homer kids, you know, very nice or whatever. But
I look at 5-star today, and we talked about this with Jason Zimmerman from Emory, and he was talking about 5-star, and we kind of got into a discussion about how you look at what 5-star is, and the fact that for so many years it was outside on the campus of Robert Morris on converted tennis courts in the 95 degree heat.
Mm-hmm.
And you had these guys who are, you know, 3 or 4 years away from earning millions and millions of dollars in the NBA. And they're playing outside
getting heat stroke
in the sun. And then you think about the quality of coaches over the years that went through 5-star. And it's incredible that I think if you tried to tell like a high level top 50 prospect in today's world that this is what the situation used to be. You used to trudge up the hill to go to the dorms and eat all this stuff. You know,
they used to get like if you were late, they used to get on you.
Yeah, right.
I remember they used to send you home with packets, and he's still coaching. His name is Tobin Anderson, and he had a perfect workout or whatever. It was basic, like you shoot 20 in each spot, right. You know, the two corners, the two wings, and the top of the key. Then you do a one dribble, you know. Pull up with, you know, the right hand, then you go left, you make 20 in or whatever. And matter of fact, I actually, like 2 months ago, I actually emailed him. I told him, I was like, man, I still have your workouts.
that's very cool. What was his reaction?
He was like, man, you need a picture. So I sent him a picture of him in the email. He was like, oh, man. He said, I haven't seen these things in years.
That's awesome.
He said, man, I basically made that up before I came to work 5-star. I was like, really? I said, it was good, man. It helped my game. It helped my game a lot.
This reminds me of something that Mike's going to roll his eyes in a second here. Mike put out this book when I was in Head Start Basketball Camp called The Fundamentals, right? Mike put this little thing out, and I think it was like a year ago. I pulled it out, and I was like, Mike, look what I still have. And it's from 22 years ago. And he's like, I even forgot that thing even existed.
Yeah, it's like a little book. We just put together a little booklet with a bunch of drills and things that I used to give out at my camp. And it's amazing. I think it's one of the things that it's been a common theme, Tony, with everybody that we've talked to, is you have these things that you as a coach do or you say,
mm-hmm.
and you have no idea who takes those ideas or who takes that workout or who takes that book mm-hmm. and does something with it that mm-hmm. you may never even know about it. Like, at least you reached back out to him and said, mm-hmm. hey, this had an impact on me. But there's probably a kid out there who used the workout the same way you did that is never going to reach out to him, that he's never going to know about. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I think we all, anybody who's in the coaching profession, has to remember, is that everything that you do is going to have some kind of an impact on the players that you coach or the people that are part of your program and
mm-hmm.
anyone that you interact with. And so it's important to remember that legacy of what you leave behind with the people that you're able to interact with is what's ultimately the most yeah. important thing.
Head Start Basketball's fall skill development clinics will be held at the Strongsville Rec Center on 4 consecutive Saturdays in October. These skill clinics will be from 4 to 6 p.m. beginning on October 5th. The skills clinics are for boys and girls in grades 1 through 8. If you're looking for a great way to get prepared for your season, sign up for the Head Start Basketball Fall Skill Development Clinics at www.headstartbasketball.com.
Like with our guys, it seems like you get even closer to your kids after they graduate or whatever. And I get a text message during Thanksgiving or, you know, Christmas, or sometimes, you know, a couple of them, they'll say, what's up, coach? And they're like, I remember how you used to get on with coach. I know what you're talking about now. You know? And that always, it's always humbling or whatever. And, you know, me growing, like, I think I grew up in probably the best generation to grow up in. And, you know, all the coaches I had, you know, they were tough and hard-nosed. And but I loved every one of them. I think I got everything from them, being I'll say old school, which, you know, you can't be old school nowadays in certain places. But in the where we are at, we're blessed to, you know, all the parents want their kids coached or whatever. And always we have great relationships with our parents and stuff like that. So it's good to, you know, get those, you know, those text messages or when a parent come up and hug you in Walmart, you know,
right,
5 years ago, or, you know, before I moved to South Louisiana to coach, I was in Sterlington High School. It's like a small 2A school, and that's probably one of the best communities to be a part of, like from the administrators, the teachers, the kids we had, the parents. It was all the people that had businesses and stuff like that. It was amazing. And those people, they still call us to this day. I remember, like, in 2016, we had a big flood down here, and, you know, my phone went off about 8 hours. But, man, when I tell you, when the phone service started working, my phone was ringing off the hook. I had over probably like 1,000 text messages from everybody. And so I had to get on Facebook to tell
them. Tell me you're okay. Yeah, you didn't get washed away, right?
Yeah, I'm on the third floor. That's where my apartment, you know, apartment complex. So I'm fine. That's always a humbling experience or whatever. But
absolutely.
Basketball has always been good to me. Even when I played in college, we went to go play Florida International or whatever. You know how you at shoot around or whatever. And I looked over to the scores table. I said, you know, I know that guy. That guy used to coach somewhere. So I got closer and looked at him. I said, you're Dave Odom, right? He's like, yeah.
Wake Forest.
Yeah, I said, you used to coach Tim Duncan. you know, at Wake Forest, he's like, yeah, yeah. He was like, and I knew I was going to be a coach after that. And I was telling him what I was going to do after. And he was like, always remember this, son. If you're good to the game going to be good to you.
It's a great quote.
You know, yeah. And that's, you know, certain stuff like that stick with you, you know. And
that's a story that you wonder, again, just like we were talking about a minute ago. Like, you'll never, ever forget that. Like, you're going to remember every detail of that little conversation and what Dave Odom said. And, you know, he may or may not remember it today if you were able to, you know, to talk to him. And it's just those things are invaluable, that we forget that as coaches we have that kind of impact. And so, just to kind of go along with what the direction that you were going there, at what point did you start to think that you might want to coach as your playing career was winding down? Was it something that you always knew you wanted to do when you finished playing, or did it kind of come to you closer to the end of your playing career?
You know, my goal, and like anybody else's goal, when you're a kid, your ultimate goal is, you know, to play in the NBA. You know,
sure. My
goal, I'm telling you, man, I didn't have a plan B. You know, I thought I was gonna be 6'5", you know, stuff like that. I ended up being 6'1", you know.
makes it a little tougher, Tony.
Oh yeah, my main goal, I want to play in the NBA, you know, not just like the fame and all that stuff, but I love the game like that. But you know, I had a great high school career, but you know, I had a good college career too, you know. I think my high school career shaped me, because when I first got in high school, you know how you hear whispers, you know, like from the older guys, you know, the coach at the time was Coach Alan Shaw. He got over 500 wins, ended up retiring a couple of years ago. And they always said, Coach, he'd been here for, you know, 15 years. He never had a freshman play JV or varsity. He only had 3 out of his 15 years. He believed that your freshman year, you just had to play varsity. I mean, play on the freshman team, regardless of how good you were, just to get, you know, acclimated with what he does and stuff like that. And your sophomore year, you know, it's, you know, if you're good enough, he gonna play you or whatever. So, you know, me being ambitious and all that, you know, I told, you know, talking to my teammates and stuff, I was like, I want to go practice with the varsity and JV team. So I waited until, you know, October to official practice started. And I asked Coach Shaw, like, you mind if I practice with y'all? You know, just to, you know. You know, I had, you know, hidden thoughts, you know, hidden agendas about, you know, I want to be the first one to play JVs or dress varsity. And I wasn't good enough, but my goal was set high or whatever. So I was practicing, you know, at the time with, you know, football season still going on. So all the football guys went in there. So I was practicing with them until like November. Then once football season over, he brought me in the office. He was like, young buck, I got to take your jersey. Which
that was the end of that dream,
yeah,
Tony.
Yeah. It, you know, he was an understandable coach. He was like, you did pretty good, but, you know, this is what I do. You know, you're going to be a good player for me or whatever. And I got that connection with him, you know. Oh, you know, like I love Coach Shaw. I was like, I'll run through the wall for him, because he was so genuine. Like he told you the truth. Like it was straightforward, you know.
What's something, if you think about yourself as a coach today, what's something that you took from him that you still utilize or has become a part of you as a coach?
He was real meticulous by how you ran his offense. Like you had to be in certain spots. You know, he ran a motion offense where you screen down and the two guys on the block would come up, and it was precise. Like it's almost like he was OCD. If you wanted those spots, if you was like 3 steps off the elbow, he'll stop practicing. No, you got to be right here, you know. And his main thing, what he taught before he showed us, you know, his offense was the secondary break, like who had to take it out, who was the storm man, you know, who was, you know, who was the trail guy, who were the two wings, you know, and what the point guard had to do and all that. It was pretty meticulous about that. And he was an offensive guy, but he just, you know, on defense or whatever, he taught the simple fundamentals of defense, how to stay in front of your man. He really taught a lot of how to get through screens, you know, so I understood how to get through screens early at a young age, you know how to not to follow your man or how to hug him and stuff like that. So
those kinds of skills, if you get that, those fundamentals early from a good coach who knows what they're doing, and you get that at an early stage in your career, I think it sets up a player for such a huge advantage moving forward, because you have an understanding of how to play the game and understand, first of all, the fundamentals, and then secondly, the nuances and the details, as you described, of how you go about playing offense, how you go about playing defense, how you move around the floor, how you get to positions. I think a lot of kids, unfortunately, sometimes don't get that. And it does set them behind. And I think from a high school coach's perspective, it points out how important it is to have a good youth program in place so that you're working with the young kids in your school district or that are part of your feeder program to make sure that they're getting those skills and that kind of coaching that they need in order to eventually be successful at the high school level.
Oh yeah. Like in his offense or whatever, he wanted to be structured. He wanted good shot selection or whatever, but he gave us a little freedom to do what we wanted in the offense, but he didn't want us to get too crazy or whatever. But his main thing, he wanted all five guys down the floor on defense. If you didn't sprint back, you sitting on the bench. Didn't sprint back, you sitting on the bench or whatever. But you know, my sophomore year, I just played JVs or whatever, and then I dressed out varsity or whatever. I grew a little bit or whatever. My junior senior year, I ended up, you know, starting, and I had a great high school career too, in those.
Did you know during that time, like at what point did you realize that you were going to have an opportunity to go ahead and play college basketball as well? When did your recruiting process start for you? When did you start to think about college basketball as a possibility?
Well, I started playing AAU my sophomore year for Louisiana Select. It's Team Millsap now. It's out of Shreveport, Louisiana, ran by Mike Diaz. He still has the team. But when I started playing against those guys or whatever, got a chance to play against Sebastian Telfair when we went to New York in the Rumble in the Bronx. You know, he played for the Juice All-Stars. I never seen nobody as quick as him in my life until I got there. I was like, man, this dude quick for no reason.
The glory days of New York City basketball.
Oh, hey, that guy, he was quick. And when he got to the NBA, you know, they, like, he had problems with his jump shot. Oh, he was making everything when we played against him. Threes, mid-range, you know. I mean, his court vision was you know, unreal. Got a chance to play against Dwight Howard when he was with that Atlanta Celtics. Guy that played for the Indiana Species, got his his first name, but his last name was Baldwin, and ended up going to UAB and played a couple years. But the main thing I enjoyed about playing on the AU team was playing against the local guys that we always used to see, you know, in Shreveport and Bossier City. Those are, you know, connecting cities to Minden or whatever. So we got a chance. I got the chance to play against those guys on Saturday or whatever. It was intense, you know.
Those neighborhood rivalries are sometimes, those are a lot more meaningful. I can definitely relate to that. I know that I always enjoyed when I was growing up playing. When you're playing in your own backyard against guys you know, it makes you that much more motivated as opposed to traveling out of town or playing against some kids that you know, that you didn't know. And I always liked, just like you described, getting a chance to play against guys that you know had a reputation. I always liked playing against guys that you know I knew were going to play college basketball here or there. So the opportunity to prove yourself against good competition was something that I always enjoyed as a player. It sounds like you were the same way.
And you know, most of them guys, you know, when I go back home, most of them are in coaching now. You know, it's two guys, Tyrone Hamilton. He might have been the best player during my, you know, in my class when I was growing up in high school. And he runs his own training program, and he helps his brother at a local high school called Southwood or whatever. And you know, we talk from time to time. Every time I come home, I see him or whatever. When we talk about the old times. I said, man, I remember you got mad at me when we played against y'all during the season or whatever. I said, that's I took funny. You out of the game. I said, man, I wouldn't want to play you the second game for sure. But, it was, you know, it was good memories.
Absolutely. It's amazing how the game kind of grabs a hold of, you know, you mentioned how the guys that you played against that were good players that they eventually end up back in coaching or in basketball in some capacity. I think it's one of the things that basketball is so unique in that way, and that once it grabs a hold of you, even if you're 8 years old, when it grabs a hold of you, it almost never lets go. And you're constantly looking for ways to stay in the game, whether that's continuing to play as you get older or coaching or being involved in it in some way. And there's, like you said, there's so many guys that are involved in the game in some capacity that played it at a high level earlier. And I think that's one of the things that is just so unique and special about the game of basketball.
Yeah, man. It's man, we can talk all day about stories, you know, the being connected, you know. I think, you know, basketball pretty much saved my life, other than, you know, my mom being strict on me and stuff like that. And but man, it done took me all over the world, you know. You know, it's always that old saying, you know, the ball is magic. You never know where it's gonna take you. You know, it can help you on the floor, you know, it can help you off the court, you know, it can help you spiritually, you know. Sometimes, you know, the game of basketball is a safe haven for pretty much all of us. It's a safe haven for me.
Yep.
Even when I'm coaching, you know, the game's a 10, we down 3, it's still a safe haven. That's good stress to me, you know. It's not, you know, bad stress is not always, you know.
A bad day on the basketball court is a good day anywhere else, right?
Oh yeah. You know, like at school, you know, our last period of the day is 8th hour, and that's basketball. That's the highlight of my day, you know. You know, just seeing our kids when, you know, only thing we can do now is lift or whatever. And with this, you know, we have a young team this year, and with this group, they're kind of close. And I see that, and the reason I say that, because we have a kid, you know, everybody making time as far as running. And, you know, we have a kid, you know, he has to, you know, he's a little slower than all of them. And the past, I mean, since we started preseason conditioning, we had at least pretty much the whole team. Like, they'll go back. I'll run extra coaching, like, without even telling them. You know, that's
special when you get a group like that. Yep. When you get a group like that, that's awesome.
You usually don't see that, you know. And the coach I work for, you know, he's old school, hard nosed, but I look at him sometimes, it's almost like he almost got teary-eyed or whatever from seeing that. And, you know, that make you feel good. Like, you know, these kids, they ready to battle. They're ready to play, you know. So it's good. It's good.
Talk a little bit about your current role there and what you do. What are some of the things as an assistant that are under your job description that you do, and how you go about trying to make your head coach's job easier so that he can do the things that he has to do?
Well, when we first get our kids on the freshman team, they always come to me. We have separate hours. So we have them, our freshman team, seventh hour. So we got like five guys in there now. And we basically just tell them how we do stuff. Because we have them in the month of June, too. So once it comes to, once school starts, we got to tell them how they need to act in the classroom, how they need to act, far as like being in the hallways and stuff like that. Teaching them the basic stuff of our offenses and stuff. The crazy thing is, the same way I ran secondary break in high school, we run it the same way now in our program or whatever.
Yeah.
So, when I teach them, it's just like.
Been doing it for a long time, right?
Yeah. And the main thing, what I try to do with those kids, is try to get to know their parents first. And I think. When we was at Snow Valley, when we had the coaches meeting.
Yes.
And, a couple of those guys were talking about how you can get a better relationship with the parents. And Coach Show said something that, I've pretty much been doing is, if a kid need a ride home or something, just take him home. Just don't drop him off. Go up to the door. Introduce yourself to the parents. See how, see how they're doing and stuff like this, because once you get to know the parent, that's when you get to know the kids too, or whatever. And for example, with this group, I was taking a kid home this summer almost every day, and the last day that I picked him up, the dad came out. He was like, "Man, I just appreciate you, man. He always say, don't too many coaches just come up and pick their kids up." And I was like, this is what we do. It ain't just something just because your son good or whatever. I mean, it don't matter if they not as good as the other kid. We take them all home. Even if they live, 20 miles away. But I think the main thing we try to do with those kids is try to build a relationship with them so they can, have a genuine trust in us or whatever. But other than that, as far as being an assistant, I've been working for the same coach since I started. So when we were at Sterlington High School in North Louisiana, it's in Monroe, Louisiana.
Is it named after you?
No, it's not. I was basically working with one of his players, his point guard or whatever. And we used to go to the same church or whatever. And I got close to him or whatever. The pastor at the time, we were all close, connected, we stay out of church. They had a basketball court up there, we would shoot or whatever. And I think Darius like, "Man, you need to meet my coach. You need to meet my coach. My coach's great, man. You need to meet my coach." I was like, "Okay, I'll come up there." And went up there, talked to him. He was like, "Man, I see you at all the games, at some of my games." I was like, yeah. He was like, "Anytime you want to come to the gym, man, just let me know." And that's how, that's how I got started, Been coaching with him ever since. He ended up getting the head job down here at Denham Springs. And He was like, "You single, young man. If you want
to come, it's time to move."
Yeah, he said, "If you want to come, man, you like family. Come on." So, before you know it, I was telling my mother, "I'm moving 4 hours away," and just go for it, you always take care of yourself. And and I actually was talking about this with one of our other assistants. How close we are as a coaching staff, we eat together, they got families and stuff like that. And, we'll go to the LSU football games, that's a pretty big deal down here,
Absolutely.
But we have a great relationship amongst ourselves, and but I go back to, you know, being an assistant coach. I try to make the job, try to make the head coach's job easier, like, you know, far as putting out a problem before it becomes a problem. You know, far as like grades, you know, like we have two schools. Like we got a freshman academy, then the school that we teach at is 10 through 12. But all our freshmen, they over at the freshman academy across the street or whatever. So like I was telling you, you know, first thing we should, like we do is try to build a relationship with the parents. But we also, at school, we try to build a relationship with all the teachers. So we've been there for 5 years, and I told it, you know, I've been telling the group, I said, if you've been misbehaving, something like that, I'm going to know. The teachers, all those teachers, they don't email me no more. They text me.
Yep, that's instantaneous, you know, anymore, right?
Yeah, they trust us. Like, they, you know, like, for example, like 2 years ago, like one of the kids, like the teacher, she's real nice. She was telling one of the kids, she's like, I hope none of y'all not basketball players, because if you're acting up, I got Coach Sterling number right here.
That's awesome. Yeah.
But
I so mean, go along with that. How important is it for you to be in the building? So is your entire coaching staff, teachers in the school district in the building?
Oh yes, like all three of us, we teach at the high school, the 10th through 12th grade school.
That's awesome. I think that's such an advantage, and I know I've talked about it before on the podcast, but I think when you're in the building, it's so much easier to build the kinds of relationships that you're talking about. Build a relationship with the kids, with the teachers, with just with each other as you know, a coaching staff. I think that it's something that, I don't know how it is in Louisiana, but here in Ohio, we have, I mean, obviously there's still a lot of people who are teachers that are in the building that are coaching, but there's a lot of people who are coaching teams that don't work in the building. Either they might be a teacher in another school district, or maybe they don't even teach at all and they just have some outside job. Mm-hmm. And I think it's got to be tremendously harder to do a good job when you're not in the building with your kids every day. And so I think for you, it's got to be a great advantage to be able to build those relationships like you were talking about.
Oh, yes. I think because not only do the kids see you every day, the teachers see you every day, you know. And like I was saying, like with, you know, the administrators at our school and all the teachers there, I mean, they're great, you know. And it's the same, you know, I don't really have to do that over there with our older guys because, you know, they had to deal with the head coach. They're misbehaving, or they have some type of, you know, problems in, you know, for, you know, behavior and stuff like that, or in the classroom. But but our teachers, they're excellent. You know, they'll tell us if, you know, like as far as what the kid need to do to, you know, get better in the classroom and stuff like that. But I think our main goal is like we have no behavior problems. It's more of I'll say staying on top of grades and, you know, stuff like that. But overall, as far as how our kids act, they understand how they need, you know, how they need to, you know, conduct themselves.
Do you find, since you guys have been there for a while now, that the kids are starting to police themselves, where the older juniors and seniors get to these freshmen and sophomores and say, hey, here's how we do things around here, and, you know, we don't do that, and this is how we take care of things? Do you find that the kids are starting to take ownership in what you guys are trying to put forth in front of them?
You know, the season before last season, I started seeing that happen with that senior bunch or whatever, because I see it with our junior class now or whatever, and they were freshmen at the time or whatever, how they need to do stuff and stuff like that. Because our first 2 years, our first 2 years there, you know, you have to get used to what you want to do and stuff like that or whatever. And in the senior class we had last year, they were good too. They, you know, it really wasn't a leader in a like one true leader in that senior group. It was all of them. however they acted, that's how everybody else acted. Like how they walked in the gym. Like for instance, like we all of them got travel gear. They gotta be zipped up. You know, nobody's, you know, their shirt tail out, no flip flops, you know, everybody wearing the same stuff or whatever. And you know, those guys they made a big deal out of that or whatever about how they need to act on the bus, you know, stuff like that. Whatever, we really didn't have to, you know, say anything about those things because, you know, those seniors, they seen the seniors before that, you know, so it kind of rubbed off on them, you know.
Yeah, that's how you know when you have a good culture, when players are policing players and starting to take ownership of things that maybe in the first or second year that the coaching staff used to have to take care of. Mm-hmm. Once the players start taking care of that, it makes it a lot easier. What are some of the things that you guys do to build the culture of your team and to cultivate the friendships and the togetherness and the type of team camaraderie that any program wants to have? What do you guys do from a culture standpoint to bring the kids together and really develop that type of atmosphere that you're describing?
I think, you know, like how you have varsity, JV, and freshman. I think the most important group in your program is your freshman team. And you start that with them. And it just build up, you know, through the years when they're in your program or whatever. And, you know, we know how we symbolize after every practice, like, we all get in a circle and we wrap our hands around each other or whatever. Regardless if it was a missed shot or if coach mad at you, it wasn't a good practice, we always end practice in, you know, in a big circle with our hands around each other. And, you know, Coach Cal, he always say something positive. You know, the practice can be bad, but it's always something positive or whatever. And Coach, you know, he always got something that stick with me too. Like on Fridays when we end in the circle, he always say, "You guys have a fun weekend and, you know, make good decisions." You know, and those kids understand that or whatever. But I think it started with the players we had before all the guys we got now. You know, we have a good relationship with them or whatever, not just because they were good, but like just the relationship that we built with them, like far as like I was saying with, you know, getting to know their family, not just getting to know the kid, but getting to know the whole family, you know, and I think that boils down to what you really want for the kid, you know, anybody, like when you do that, that's with anything, some, like when they see that you care, that's all.
So that goes so far. It really does. Yeah. Because I think once they know you care, then they know that when you coach them hard, that it's coming from a position of trust and a position of love, as opposed to, I'm just getting on you because I need a better performance out of you on the court. It's because I really care about you, and I want you to be at your best. I want you to fulfill your potential. And you've got to be able to develop that relationship first, though, mm-hmm. in order to get there. And I think it's, you know, mm-hmm. if you try to shortcut that process and mm-hmm. do it without, mm-hmm. you know, do it without that relationship, I think that's when you get in trouble, and that's when kids mm-hmm. and teams, mm-hmm. that's when the coach loses the kids and loses teams, is when they don't have that relationship, and then they try to push hard on a kid, and the kid's like, this guy doesn't care about me. Why am I running through a wall for him? That doesn't make any sense. Yeah, so I think it's important to build that relationship. Like you said, it's key to being, I think, a successful coach in today's society.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, majority of the kids that we have in our program, you know, I say if they're not keeping in touch with me, they keep in touch with one of the other two coaches. Like, for instance, we had a kid, he was a 10th grader when we first got here. Good athlete, very good leader, very, like, probably one of the best leaders, you know, I've coached. You know, whatever he did, all those, like, everybody followed. He got on the bus, he would be like, nobody say nothing, we winning the game tonight. Once we get on the bus, you know, that's when we can, you know, that's when we can talk and celebrate.
Yep. Yep.
But, you know, he wasn't, you know, good enough to go to college. And I tell you, you know, Coach Cav got a great heart. He said, you know, the kid wanted to go in the military. I mean, Coach Cav did everything because Coach Cav did everything possible for this kid to have that opportunity. You know, he didn't do so well a couple of times on the ASVAB and all that. And before I went to Snow Valley this past July, the kid ended up passing the ASVAB, and all three of us, we took him to the best restaurant in Baton Rouge, and you know, we was happy for him. And
that's awesome.
And that's probably saying a lot, because Baton Rouge has got some good restaurants, I'm sure, right?
Hey, come down here, Coach. It's anything you want, Coach, as far as food. I mean, I used to be a little bean pole, man. That, you know, I'm
dinner, picking up dinner weight in now. Baton Rouge followed by a game at Death Valley. That sounds like a good plan.
Hey, good old chimes. You got walk-ons, whatever you want. You know, good seafood, good everything, from hamburgers, anything you want. Etouffee, you know, jambalaya, whatever you want. You know? But I know for a fact when we dropped Dorsett off, that Coach Cav, he had his shades on, and I didn't want to look at him, but his cheeks were red, but he shed some tears, and I couldn't look at him because I shed some tears too, because you know that kid, he lives in Baton Rouge, and it's not a great area for that kid to get that. And you know, Coach Cav was telling the story. He was like, man, you know, you probably put on 15 pounds, but once you go through basic training, you're gonna lose
all those pounds are coming off quick.
Oh yeah, yeah. So, but you know, just like, for instance, with another kid, with one of our other assistants, Coach McGee, he told one of our kids, he said, you need to text or call me at least once a week. He said, if I don't hear from you, I'm coming to your house. You know, just to, you know, the kid, you know, he has an okay home life, but he needs a, you know, for instance, he needs a father figure in his life or whatever. And just, you know, when he was with us, you know, he used to come to me sometimes about, you know, what's going on or whatever. Nothing bad, you know, as far as, you know, financially and stuff. And great kid, you know, he just works hard. I mean, he actually in a trade school right now, doing pretty good. But, you know, like with Coach McGee, he told the kid, you need to text me at least once a week or whatever. And, you know, it's all y'all. You know, it's all about building relationships. You know, and I always say build relationships. I don't like the term, you know, having connections, because I feel like when you say connections, it's like you're using somebody or whatever. I like building relationships. Yep. You know, I like to get to know people. You know, and you can look at that in a general way. You know, as far as how the world goes, like. You know, you, for instance, you can say this person bad, but get to know them.
Yep.
Guaranteed.
So true.
You will dig deep enough to find out what's hurting them. Maybe you can help them. And I guarantee it, when you help them, they're going to come out a better person. You know, we everybody make mistakes, you know, or whatever. And, you know, I make them in coaching, you know, we make them in life, but, it's all about helping people.
It really is. Those are two awesome stories that you shared about your kids. And I think there's no better endorsement of the coaching profession and what it's all about than those two stories that you just told. You take a kid out to a nice dinner with your entire coaching staff as a way to reward him, thank him, just spend time with him before he goes to the military. And then a kid who you want him to check in once a week so that you can continue to build that relationship and continue to build trust and continue to pour into that kid to hopefully have the kind of positive impact that's going to last, not just when he's 16 or 17 or 18, but when he's 30, when he's 40, he's going to look back on what you guys as a coaching staff were able to do for him and realize that the impact that you guys were able to have in a positive way. And a lot of times you don't even know that that's happening. Like when they're 16, you hope you're having an impact right there in the moment. But a lot of times, just like you described with the story with Dave Odom or other things that you remember, that those things, you're still carrying those with you long into your adult life. And I think that there's no better way of encapsulating what it means to be a coach than those two stories. I think you hit the nail on the head with the way you told them and just how impactful I'm sure those two things were that you and your coaching staff did for those kids.
Oh yeah. And it's, you know, we still have kids that stay around the area, and they're working and stuff like that, and or whatever, and they'll come to our games, and you know, instead of them hugging, you know, we have a hand, you know, have handshakes or whatever. And,
right. Yep.
You know, we actually had a kid that played for us that up in Sterlington High School. He moved down here, and one day he was telling me, you know, I'm in town, Coach. Don't tell Coach Cab. You know, let's surprise him. And so before, you know, like we're in the locker room doing pregame. So he texted me, whatever, let him in. And he walked in with me, and you know, Coach Cal like, "Dang, Coach, I got my grandson from Houston here now." you know, stuff like that, and you know that they give he had some extra energy that night when, yep. when you know,
absolutely,
you know, that was a good win and stuff like that. But like I was saying, you know, before, like a simple sport could, you know, change somebody's life. It changed my life, you know, me growing up with a single parent, you know, I had the greatest mom in the world, you know, I mean, she told me, you know, I gave you everything in the world that you need on top of that. And then some, but she was like, I could never teach you how to be a man. She said, you have to learn that on your own. She said, that might be what you struggle with. And, you know, I found most of my father figures in as, you know, the coaches that I played for, you know, the coach at Northwestern State, he's a father figure to me. The coach I work for, I call him the godfather. He's my godfather.
He's another cool father
figure. And the coach that works with, he's a great role model of a father figure. The coaches I played for in college, you know, we all in a group message, you know, all the sayings he used to say when we was at, you know, at the junior college I was at, even when I was at ULM, them guys, they get a text message every, on their birthday, on their, during Thanksgiving, during Christmas, some of them, they get a text message every month about, you know, some situations, how they deal with it as a coach, you know. But
it's all about relationships. I think that's okay. I think that's the key, is that when you build relationships, whether it's a player to coach relationship, whether it's a coach to coach relationship, player to player relationship, those are the things that really drive your enjoyment of the game. And B, they also drive ultimately the success that you have in your life and in your other relationships outside of sports. I think sports is such a good teacher of those kinds of life lessons. Tony, let me ask you, what do you think, as you look down into the future here, what do you see, what direction do you see you going with your basketball coaching career in terms of, do you have any ideas of maybe at some point wanting to take over your own program? What do you have on the docket for summer basketball camps? Just talk a little bit about what you hope to accomplish with coaching moving forward.
You know, everybody have goals. Like actually, like 2 months ago, while I was actually at Snow Valley, one of the coaches asked me, he was like, "Where are your goals, coach?" And I told him I really didn't know. I said, other than just being around the game of basketball.
Yep.
Of course, you know, want to be a head coach one day. I just recently got offered a couple of college coaching positions, but I think basketball is all the same. But I love being at the high school level and just enjoying, getting the kid, just enjoying getting to know the kids while they're young and just seeing them, just seeing them grow as they get older or whatever. Just planting the seed. It's almost like you watering a plant, man. You just see.
Yep.
Is it gonna grow to be, a great plant, or is, you have some major input in that kid growing. That kid gonna remember me just how the coaches that I played for, I remember them, I just enjoy. I just want to be around the game of basketball, hopefully if I have some kids one day, I want to do the same thing, for them, let them experience it or whatever. I think that's just being around the game.
Being around the game is enough, right?
Yeah. That's just being around the game.
Right before you, we talked to Coach Mike Dunlap from Loyola Marymount and asked him about he's coached at so many different levels from, Division III college all the way up to the NBA. And, one of the questions I asked him was what's similar about the game of basketball at all those levels. And he actually ran through five different things but it still came down to the fact that basketball is basketball. And whether you're an assistant coach, whether you're a head coach, whether you're at the high school level, whether you're coaching a second grade team, you're coaching the NBA, the people who are coaching love the game. And I think that's clear with you. And I know I feel the same way. And I was in, your situation is somewhat unique in that you've been an assistant coach for the same head coach for 8 years. Mm-hmm. And that was the same thing that I did. I coached for, I think I ended up coaching a total of 14 years maybe as an assistant coach, but the first 12 or 13 of them were we had the exact same coaching staff that entire time. So our head coach was the same, and then I was the varsity assistant, and then we had a JV coach. And it was just like you described, like we were best buddies and hung out all the time and practice would end and we'd hang around the coach's office. And so that to me, like when I first got my job as an assistant coach there at the school where I teach, I thought, I'm going to be here for a year or two, and then I'm going to move on and take over my own program and be a head coach. And eventually I kind of settled in and really liked the people I was working with and, was able to have a lot of input into what went on in the program. And my head coach was great in terms of giving me responsibility and letting me have a say in some of the things that we did. And so what I thought was going to be a short 1 or 2 year stint as an assistant, I ended up doing it for 13 or 14 years. Mm-hmm. And it was, again, just like you, I wanted to be around the game of basketball. And that really was what it was all about for me too.
Mm-hmm. It's any level don't matter, man. It's the same, you're still going to have to, you're going to affect your players in a good way, regardless if they're 13 years old, if they're in college, where they're 20 years old, or if they're in the NBA, they're 30 years old, you're still going to have an effect on them or whatever. So I'm enjoying it.
Yep, there's no question about that. All right, Tony, I want to wrap things up by giving you a chance to share out your contact information, how people can reach out to you if they've been listening to the podcast, they have a question, or they just want to connect. And then if there's anything that we didn't touch on tonight that you want to share as kind of your parting shot, you can go ahead and do that as well, and then we'll wrap up the episode.
If you want to contact me or whatever, my email is antonio.sterling@lpsb.org or whatever. If you want to call me or text me, my number is 4945. I think as a coach, you know, you gotta be, you like Coach Lockie has another great quote, and it's learn how to learn. You know, you can learn by reading. You know, you got YouTube. You know, if whoever you know, it can be a middle school coach, high school coach. You know, reach out to them. You know, I was talking to Dale Brown a year and a half ago, and he was like he learned probably the best zone, man-to-man zone, from a middle school coach or whatever. Just learn from everybody. Try to read every day. You know, when I went out to the Nike Basketball Academy a couple weeks ago in California, and I got a chance to talk to George Raveling for about 30 minutes, and he was telling me, you know, try to read a book at least once a week, you know, and I've been trying, you know, we got school and stuff, so
it's a challenge. That's one thing. I wish I could read more than I do. I try to read quite a bit, but man, I wish I had more time to read. There's so many books out there. I'm like, man, I wish I could just sit down and spend 4 hours here reading this book. And there's just so much good information about helping yourself to grow. I think that's a great point. And Coach Raveling does an excellent job of, if anybody follows him on Twitter, or you go and look at his website, you know, just look up George Raveling, and he's got some great stuff out there. And the fact that you got to spend 30 minutes with him, that's a blessing.
Oh yeah. Hey, he gave me his email. He said, you know, email him anytime. You know, he said, I don't have all the questions, but I can help you. Awesome. But just be motivated to learn, you know, try to build relationships with everybody possible. And like Dave Odom told me, you know, if you're good to the game gonna be good to you.
No doubt. That is a great way to wrap it up. Tony, we can't thank you enough for spending an hour and 20 minutes or so with us. It's been a pleasure, especially after we got to get to know you a little bit in person at Snow Valley, and now being able to dig a little bit deeper into your story tonight has been a lot of fun. And to everyone out there, we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.